material for that. A lot of places also have life jacket loaner stations if people don't have them. And I think you can just look those up online about, you know, where some of those are. But yeah, there's plenty of resources and multiple agencies, Portland Fire and Rescue in the local area, and Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. You know, all of our agencies are trying to communicate this same type of topic.
Is there anything else you would like people to know?
We're looking at the target demographic of mainly males 18 and older who don't wear their life jacket. So I think, you know, parents do a pretty decent job of making sure their kids are wearing their life jackets, but they don't model that behavior for them. And so I just think it's really important for adults to wear life jackets in front of their kids, so that becomes kind of a learned behavior overall, so that they don't think that, oh, well, I'm an adult now, I don't need a life jacket. So that would be an important thing for people to keep in mind.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
That was Tom Cunning from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers speaking with me about water safety. For KBOO News, I'm on.
Hi, I'm David Brower, David R. Brower, and I add the R because there are 100 other David Browers in the United States, and that keeps me separate from most of them. I like the direction you're going in, KBOO, Portland, and I wish you had a lot more company.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Poet Audre Lorde.
We have to see racism as part of a context that is racism, sexism, homophobia, classism, all of the ways in which we are devalued in one identity or another of ourselves.
And poet Adrian Rich.
This poem was written a year ago to a friend, the lesbian feminist linguist Julia Stanley. And it's called For Julia in the Brass Cell.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. A trans former judge takes the UK to the Euro Court. The Equality Act is reintroduced in the US Congress, and Adrian Rich and Audre Lorde still speak truth to power. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Melanie Keller.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 3rd, 2025. She was denied the right to be heard when the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom ruled on the definition of the word woman in the 2010 Equality Act. So, a transgender former High Court judge is taking her voice to the European Court of Human Rights. Dr. Victoria McLeod will go to Strasbourg seeking a declaration that the court's ruling violates her fundamental rights under the European Convention on Human Rights. The Supreme Court decided that a person's gender assigned at birth is an immutable biological state, and that the concept of sex is binary. A person is either a woman or a man. McLeod was the first openly transgender judge in UK history. She and one other trans person offered to testify about how the decision would impact their lives. The judges opted not to hear from outside witnesses. The UK government's interim guidance for public spaces and commercial businesses refers to trans women as biological men and says they should not be permitted to use the women's facilities. McLeod told the BBC, "I have female anatomy. It isn't safe for women to use the men's loos. It is as simple as that."
The UK's Supreme Court's decision on the definitions of woman and sex is being felt across the sports world. Both the Scottish and English football associations will now ban transgender women from women's soccer teams. The Irish and Welsh football associations are still considering the government's guidance on implementing the trans-exclusive ruling. A trans ban is also expected from the England and Wales Cricket Board, according to the BBC. England Netball will institute 3 gender participation categories starting in September, one for cisgender and trans men, one for players born female regardless of gender identity, and an exclusive mixed category. There are only about 20 registered transgender amateur players in the country. Football versus Transphobia's Natalie Washington told the BBC she fears many of them will leave the sport for reasons of safety, for reasons of comfort.
Today, we introduce the Equality Act not just as a bill, but as a declaration that freedom, dignity, and opportunity must belong to all Americans. That is the promise of the Equality Act, full humanity under the law.
California Representative Mark Takano is singing what should be a familiar tune in the U.S. Congress. The Equality Act that would amend the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was originally introduced in the House in 1974. As chair of the Congressional Equality Caucus, Takano brought the measure forward at a pivotal moment on the 100th day of the Trump administration.
Right now, the fear in our community is deep, and it is palpable. The waves of attacks on LGBTQ plus Americans, LGBTQI plus Americans, have swept from state legislatures into the chambers of Congress and the White House. We demand that our existence be not just recognized, but protected. We demand not just the right to survive, but to thrive.
Takano was flanked by a powerhouse of Democratic legislators, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, House Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, transgender Delaware Congresswoman Sarah McBride, and Wisconsin's longtime lesbian senator, Tammy Baldwin.
Depending on where you live in this country, you are afforded a different set of fundamental rights if you are gay, lesbian, or transgender. And let that sink in. It's a patchwork of rights and protections depending on who you are and who you love. This is simply a matter of right and wrong. I, for one, believe that every American deserves to be treated and protected equally under the law.
Various versions of the Equality Act have passed the House over the years. It's never made it through the Senate. With both chambers in Republican hands and relentless foes in and around the Oval Office, the chances of it moving forward this time are no doubt slim to none.
A case that could determine whether private businesses must offer coverage for pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, in their employee insurance policies got a hearing before the U.S. Supreme Court this week. What began as a religious objection to HIV prevention has mushroomed into a full-scale attack on all preventative care under the Affordable Care Act. Braidwood Management of Texas refused to subsidize PrEP for its workers, saying that it encouraged homosexual behavior, intravenous drug use, and sexual activity outside marriage between one man and one woman. In the words of Lambda Legal HIV Project Director Jose Abrego, "The Braidwood case is about whether science or politics will guide our nation's public health policy, allowing ideological or religious objections to override scientific consensus, which set a dangerous precedent. If the plaintiffs succeed, the consequences will be felt across every community in this country by anyone who relies on preventative care to stay healthy." Abrego did not mention that a win for the Affordable Care Act would set the stage for problematic Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to assume a major role in determining what preventative services should be mandated.
Under Secretary Kennedy's leadership, Health and Human Services released a 400-page long report on May 1st entitled Treatment for Pediatric Gender Dysphoria, Review of Evidence and Best Practices. The unknown authors argue for what they call exploratory therapy as the best treatment for gender dysphoria in children. To GLAAD's Sarah Kate Ellis, it's just conversion therapy by another name. White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller's cringeworthy hyperbolism was front and center for his presentation of the report.
Castration surgeries, castration drugs, sterilization treatments of children are barbaric. They violate all sound medical ethics. They are completely unwarranted. They harm children for life irreversibly. It is child torture. It is child abuse. It is medical malpractice.
The American Academy of Pediatrics is deeply alarmed by the new HHS report, according to its president, Dr. Susan Cressley. She wrote that it misrepresents the current medical consensus and fails to reflect the realities of pediatric care.
With a May Day vote by local authorities in the small southeastern town of Landshut, Poland said goodbye to its last remaining LGBT-free zone. Up to 100 municipalities officially prohibited what they called LGBT ideology during the 8-year reign of the right-wing Law and Justice government. A Supreme Administrative Court ruling in 2022 declared the zones unconstitutional. Those declarations had no real legal force, but they chilled support for LGBTQ plus rights and equality programs in Poland. They also chilled financial support from the European Union, which froze billions of euros that would have gone to the LGBT free zones for infrastructure, environmental initiatives, and other projects.
A group of Montgomery County, Maryland parents would like to put a no promo homo shield around their children when LGBTQ related books come up in school. And they might have found six sympathetic ears in the U.S. Supreme Court's conservative justices. The High Court heard arguments in a long and sometimes heated exchange on April 22nd. Parents could originally opt out of those lessons, but the system became too cumbersome for the district to manage. The opt-outs were discontinued, so some religious parents sued. Only Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson empathized with the district. Justices Alito and Kavanaugh failed to understand why the opt-out policy was unfeasible. Alito and Sotomayor debated the message behind Uncle Bobby's wedding. Justice Jackson pointed out that these questions don't always have one answer because communities have different standards. At a rally outside the court, gay Montgomery County Councilman Evan Glass told the crowd, "They want to erase us from existence. We celebrate our diversity. We recognize we can all coexist." Opposite him, plaintiff parent Wael El-Koshiri said that school officials and parents break ranks when inclusion stops and where indoctrination started.
Finally,
kiss the girl won't change the world, but I'm so glad I kissed the girl.
In a way, singer-songwriter Jill Sobule did change the world with that kiss. In 1995, I Kissed a Girl became the first LGBTQ-themed song to break into the top 20 of Billboard's Modern Rock, and it did so despite being banned from the airwaves in several southern U.S. states. GLAAD President and CEO Sarah Kate Ellis recalls, "Long before it was safe or common, Jill was writing and singing about sexuality and identity with raw honesty and wit." Jill Sobule was killed in a house fire on May 1st. She said of one of her last pieces, "It's not my best song, but it does get to the point.
The smallest puppy is a rug. Some people needing heart surgery get a shunt. Sometimes in baseball they bunt. The host of Candy Camera was Alan Funtz. I'll tell you something else is true. If you allow me to be real blunt. J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance is a real character.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending May 3rd, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay safe.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis.
I'm Margaret Cho.
I'm John Ritchie.
This is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm Kate Quinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, this is Ian McKellen.
I'm Jerry Jewell.
I'm Stephen Fry.
I'm Harvey Milk.
Hi, this is Janice Ian.
My name's Robbie Rogers.
This is Essex Hemphill.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
I'm Tab Hunter.
I'm Billy Beam.
This is John Cameron Mitchell.
Hello, I'm Bruce Valange.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson.
I'm Reverend Troy Perry.
I'm Robbie Kaplan.
I'm Andrew Sullivan.
This is Augustine Burroughs.
I'm Barney Frank.
I'm Cleve Jones.
My name is Kate Kendall.
I'm Dan Savage.
I'm B.D. Wong.
This is Dorothy Alice.
I'm Patricia Nell Warren.
I'm Amanda Burst.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, and you've discovered
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The showpiece of the homosexual movement.
The international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
How dare they?
And those who love them.
You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
Oh, my.
And that's the truth.
Please do stay tuned.
Listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Adrienne Rich and Audre Lorde, two giants in the world of poetry, regardless of gender or orientation. How cool is it to hear them together, thanks to the Pacifica Radio Archives? The Poetry Foundation website calls lesbian feminist poet and essayist Adrienne Rich one of the foremost public intellectuals in the United States. Black lesbian mother warrior poet Audre Lorde spoke to the personal and political aspects of racism, sexism, classism, and homophobia. We'll hear first from Adrienne Rich.
From Pacifica Station WBAI in New York City, in a program simply titled Women Poets Reading, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and broadcast on December 2nd, 1972.
Planetarium. This poem is written thinking of Caroline Herschel, 1750 to 1848, who was an astronomer, the sister of William Herschel, and who worked with him throughout his life, but whose name has remained obscure, as his did not. A woman in the shape of a monster in the shape of a woman, the skies are full of them. A woman in the snow, among the clocks and instruments, or measuring the ground with poles. In her 98 years to discover 8 comets, she whom the moon ruled, like us, levitating into the night sky, riding the polished lenses. Galaxies of women there, doing penance for impetuousness, ribs chilled, in those spaces of the mind. There's a quotation that follows here from Tycho Brahe, who said that his calculations were virile, precise, and absolutely certain. An eye, virile, precise, and absolutely certain, from the mad webs of Uranusborg, encountering the nova. Every impulse of light exploding from the core as life flies out of us. Tycho whispering at last, let me not seem to have lived in vain. What we see, and seeing is changing. The light that shrivels a mountain and leaves a man alive. Heartbeat of the pulsar, heart sweating through my body. The radio impulse pouring in from Taurus. I am bombarded, yet I stand. I have been standing all my life in the direct path of a battery of signals, the most accurately transmitted, most untranslatable language in the universe. I am a galactic cloud so deep, so involuted that a light wave could take 15 years to travel through me, and has taken. I am an instrument in the shape of a woman trying to translate pulsations into images for the relief of the body and the reconstruction of the mind. This poem is derived from a dream, which derived from a film, and the film is Cocteau's Orpheus. I dream I'm the death of Orpheus. I am walking rapidly through striations of light and dark thrown under an arcade. I am a woman in the prime of life with certain powers, and those powers severely limited by authorities whose faces I rarely see. I am a woman in the prime of life, driving her dead poet in a black Rolls Royce through a landscape of twilight and thorns. A woman with a certain mission, which, if obeyed to the letter, will leave her intact. A woman with the nerves of a panther. A woman with contacts among hell's angels. A woman feeling the fullness of her powers at the precise moment when she must not use them. A woman sworn to lucidity, who sees through the mayhem, the smoky fires of these underground streets, her dead poet learning to walk backward against the wind on the wrong side of the mirror.
Audre Lorde is best known for The Cancer Journals and Zami, A New Spelling of My Name. This poem was written before either of those were published.
Recorded at St. Peter's Church in New York City, March 7th, 1979.
This is a poem for Francis, Walking Our Boundaries. This first bright day has broken the back of winter. We rise from war to walk across the earth around our house, both stunned that sun can shine so brightly after all our pain. Cautiously, we inspect our joint holdings. A part of last year's garden still stands, bracken. One tough, missed okra pod clings to the vine, a parody of fruit, cold hard and swollen. Underfoot, one rotting shingle is becoming loam. I take your hand beside the compost heap, glad to be alive and still with you. We talk of ordinary articles with relief, while we peer upward, each half afraid there will be no tight buds started on our ancient apple tree, so badly damaged by last winter's storm. Knowing it does not pay to cherish symbols when the substance lies so close at hand, waiting to be held, your hand falls off the apple bark like casual fire. Along my back, my shoulders are dead leaves waiting to be burned to life. The sun is watery warm. Our voices seem too loud for this small yard, too tentative for women so in love. The siding has come loose in spots. Our footsteps hold this place together as our place. Our joint holdings, our joint decisions make the possible whole. I do not know when we shall laugh again, but next week we will spade up another plot for this spring's planting.
Adrian Rich was at that same event, March 7th, 1979.
For Julia in Nebraska, in the Midwest of Willa Cather, the railroad looks like a braid of hair, a grandmother's strong hands plaited straight down a granddaughter's back.
Out there last autumn, the streets dreamed copper luster. The fields of winter wheat whispered long snows yet to fall. We were talking of matrices. And now it's spring again already. This stormy Sunday lashed with rain. I call you in Nebraska. Here you're planting your garden, sanding and oiling a burl of wood. Hear in your voice the intention to survive the long war between mind and body. And we make a promise to talk this year about growing older. And I think we're making a pledge. Though nothing in the books of ritual is useful between women, we still can make vows together, long distance, in electrical code. Today you were promising me to live, and I took your word, Julia, as if it were my own. We'll live to grow old and talk about it too. I've listened to your words, seen you stand in the cauldron's glare, rendering grammar by the white heat of your womanly wrath. Brave linguist, bearing your double axe and shield, painfully honed and polished. No word lies cool on your tongue, bent on restoring meaning to our lesbian names in quiet fury, weaving the chronicle so violently torn. On this beautiful, ever-changing land, the historical marker says, man fought to establish a home. Fought whom? The marker is mute. They named this Catherland for Willa Cather, lesbian. The marker is mute. The marker white men set on a land of broken treaties, Indian blood, women wiped out in childbirth, massacres. For Willa Cather, the lesbian, whose letters were burnt in shame. And if I've written in passion, live, Julia, what was I writing but my own pledge to myself, where the love of women is rooted? And what was I saluting but the matrices we weave, web upon web, delicate rafters, flung in audacity to the prairie skies, nets of telepathy contrived to outlast the iron road laid out in blood across the land they called virgin, nets, strands, a braid of hair, a grandmother's strong hands plaited straight down a granddaughter's back.
In this one-of-a-kind recording, Audre Lorde takes listener phone calls live in studio on WBAI New York in 1982.
People gotta first learn to understand that we're just people. If they drop the bomb today or tomorrow, we're gonna all die together. Yeah?
Right, yeah. That's very true. But when we talk about it's all racism, I think we have to look at what oppression means and to see racism as certainly the very major oppression, but not the only oppression. For instance, how do we deal with racism within the Black community when acts are against Black gays or Black transvestites or Black lesbians? Will you, for instance, march to defend the Black people who were killed or who were beaten up in Blues, which was an attack on a primarily Black transvestite bar here in New York 3 weeks ago? I mean, we have to deal with what does it mean that a police attack on a group of Black people appeared on page 54 of the primary Black weekly in this country? What other group having been attacked, what other Black group having been attacked by policemen would not have a story on the front page? But since this was Black transvestites, right, who cares about Black gays? So when we talk about racism, we have to see racism as part of a context that is racism, sexism, homophobia, classism, all of the ways in which we are devalued in one identity or another of ourselves.
I understand where you're coming from. But you see, I think even the scope is bigger than that, because, like, you know, And so we as a people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Actually learn to have that respect
for each other. You're right. Until we can learn to have respect for each other and our differences. Yeah, you're very, very right.
Books by Adrian Rich include On Lies, Secrets, and Silence, and Tonight No Poetry Will Serve. She died in 2012. Audre Lorde's works include Sister Outsider and Poetry Is Not a Luxury. She died in 1992.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Melanie Keller and Michael LeBeau, and produced by Brian DeShazer and Greg Gordon. Our correspondents were Lucia Chappell and Brian DeShazer. Jill Sobel and Sugar Kansas and Salmon Like the Fish performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Hal Myers of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on WHYS, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins, Ward, Colorado, 7RGY, Geeveston, Tasmania, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
KBOO Portland.
Trans in the plant world too. We got bisexual, asexual, heterosexual, and trans. All these plants we see around us, and we don't maybe really think about all the ways in which they've got a whole rainbow of different ways of existing and surviving. And the ones that are here now are the ones that have survived for so many different changes climatically on the planet. And that's because they embrace diversity and they're not just choosing one path within a little box.
This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Massive protests answer UK top court's anti-trans ruling, queer community mourns death of more accepting pope, and the natural world comes out with Jason Journeyman Wise. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Natalie Munoz.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 26th, 2025. They were chanting, "When trans rights are under attack, what do? Fight back." Hundreds of thousands of protesters filled the streets of London to denounce the UK Supreme Court's decision that excludes transgender women from the legal definition of woman. The April 19th emergency demonstration in London's Parliament Square was organized by 24 queer and human rights groups on less than 3 days' notice. Organizers and police officials alike marveled at the size of the crowd that spilled over into St. James Park. Pink, white, and blue trans rights flags waved as passionate pro-trans speakers expressed their anger over the High Court decision. Demonstrations were also held in Liverpool, Manchester, Leeds, Sheffield, and Nottingham. Photos of the massive crowds flooded social media. More than 1,000 people also marched through the central square of the Welsh capital of Cardiff. Future actions are planned for cities including Cambridge and Oxford. Protesters also hit the streets in Edinburgh and Glasgow, Scotland, where it all began. A 2018 Scottish law required that at least 50% of board members on public bodies be women. Lower courts had ruled that transgender women with gender recognition certificates declaring them to be female could be considered women for purposes of that law. About 8,500 gender recognition certificates have been issued, according to the Associated Press. The 5-judge Supreme Court panel's April 16th decision overturned the previous rulings. It concluded that the legal definition of sex refers only to biological or sex assigned at birth. The High Court essentially rejected the concept of gender identity. Anti-trans forces interpret the ruling to mean that trans women and non-binary people can be blocked from using sex-segregated facilities such as bathrooms and changing rooms. It also implies that female hospital wards and sports could be closed to trans women. However, the Supreme Court insisted that provisions of the Equality Act barring discrimination against transgender people still apply.
If a person is gay and seeks God and has goodwill, who am I to judge? With those words, Roman Catholic Pope Francis changed the tenor of the Church's relationship with the LGBTQ+ community. However, he did nothing to change the Church's anti-queer doctrines. The complicated relationship with Francis that began in 2013 came to an end with his death on April 21st, the day after he celebrated one last Easter in Rome. He was 88. Compared to his predecessor, Pope Benedict, Francis seemed to regularly push the acceptance envelope. His famous, "Who am I to judge?" quote made headlines just a few months into his papacy. He took a stand against unjust discrimination against LGBTQ+ people in 2016. But he also said, "There are absolutely no grounds for considering homosexual unions to be in any way similar or even remotely analogous to God's plan for marriage and family." Francis opposed the criminalization of LGB people in a 2023 Associated Press interview, saying, "Being homosexual isn't a crime. Persons with homosexual tendencies are children of God. God loves them. God accompanies them. Condemning a person like this is a sin." The Pope maintained a supportive relationship with Rome's transgender community, but in March 2024, he called gender-affirming healthcare a grave violation of humanity. Queer Catholics around the world acknowledged the two sides of Francis's legacy. The Global Network of Rainbow Catholics declared, "Catholics and people of all faiths and no faith have felt the power of his love and compassion for humankind, as well as for the planet that we inhabit." The organization Dignity USA said that he raised awareness of LGBTQ+ issues in our church in truly unprecedented ways and made a point of being seen meeting with LGBTQ+ people frequently. This sent a message of recognition and inclusion we never experienced from the Vatican before. To Australian Catholics for Equality, Pope Francis shepherded the church on an irreversible path toward becoming a more authentically welcoming and inclusive community for LGBTIQA+ people. The Tewkesbury, Massachusetts-based group, Catholic Quest, called Francis's pontificate a blessing to the world and the LGBT community especially. CEO Sarah Kate Ellis of GLAAD mourned the Pope's passing, noting that she had met with him twice. To her, he was a transformational leader who included LGBTQ people in historic ways. Veteran British-based human rights activist Peter Tatchell has devoted decades to protesting the church's anti-LGBTQ policies. Extending his condolences to queer Catholics around the world, he offered, "While we often disagreed on issues of LGBT+ rights, I acknowledge his more compassionate tone towards sexual minorities." The Trump administration is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to allow its ban on transgender military service to continue while its constitutionality is being challenged. A three-judge panel of the California-based Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals and several lower courts had issued temporary injunctions to prevent the administration from enforcing the policy during litigation. Lambda Legal and other queer and human rights advocacy groups challenging the ban say they'll soon file papers opposing the administration's Supreme Court request. Chaos reportedly reigns at the Department of Defense under the apparently hapless and incompetent Secretary Pete Hegseth. As White House lawyers pushed Trump's trans troop ban on April 24th, the Pentagon announced that it will resume gender-affirming health care for those service members. This according to a memo obtained by Politico. Coverage for those treatments was denied by the first Trump administration, resumed by the Biden administration, and then revoked again by Trump on the first day of his second term. The memo notes that a lower court has already struck down the Trump administration's anti-trans military edict as unconstitutional.
Another Trump administration order is facing a temporary roadblock. This one demanding that passport and visa applicants be limited to only male or female gender markers. A group of transgender and non-binary plaintiffs challenging the restrictions are represented by the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU says Boston-based U.S. District Court Judge Julia Kobik has concluded that the order is likely unconstitutional and in violation of the law. Her preliminary injunction requires the State Department to allow six transgender and non-binary plaintiffs to obtain passports with designations consistent with their gender identity while their lawsuit proceeds. Their attorneys plan to ask the judge to make it a class action lawsuit so that all trans and non-binary people in the United States will be protected. Several Western countries have issued warnings to trans and non-binary U.S. travelers. They strongly urge people with potentially problematic passports and visas with an X or any gender marker other than male or female to check first with their nearest U.S. embassy well before a planned departure.
Finally, a transgender teenage boy in Mississippi must wait until he turns 21 to legally change his name to reflect his gender identity. Despite the consent of both parents, the Supreme Court of the southern U.S. state said its decision is based on the boy's lack of maturity. Minors in Mississippi can usually legally change their name if both parents agree. Indeed, the state's laws allow 15-year-olds to even marry with parental consent. The boy's mother tried to initiate the process in July 2023 when her son was 16. The county clerk denied their request, saying he was acting in the best interest of the boy, who goes by the initials SMB. He's now 18 and will have to wait until 2028 to legally change his gender. Who's the one with the lack of maturity?
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending April 26th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Natalie Munoz. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll go outside for a while and
Is Mother Nature really cisgendered and heterosexual? Or are they something else entirely? Oppressive governments like the Trump administration may try to erase queer identities and histories, but science is recognizing that the rigid patriarchal binary view of the natural world is no match for the true, fluid, diverse, and interdependent reality. Jason Wise is a certified California naturalist and educator who's known as Jason Journeyman on social media for his videos on queer ecology. This Way Out's Jason Jen took a walk on the wild side to learn more about how an LGBTQ plus activist can change people's perspectives on nature and impact environmental policy.
Thank you, Jason, for joining us on This Way Out Radio. And we're so pleased to have you here to answer some questions about queer ecology, what it is, and what you do.
Thank you, Jason, for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk about queer ecology. It's one of my favorite topics. It's such a powerful discussion piece for queer individuals, but also just for diversity in general. A lot of people associate queer ecology with gay animals. And it definitely is that. It is the LGBTQ, but it's a much broader topic. So when we zoom out on this more academic topic, it's anything that we observe in nature that defies Western cultural expectations. So that could be a heteronormative expectation, right? But it also could, it gets into issues of like the patriarchy or even sort of this Western cultural individualism, you know, pick yourself up by your own bootstraps versus maybe a more of a communal society. And we see examples of nature just having a whole bunch of different ways of organizing. There's social structures that do not fit neatly into a Western cultural box of the way that we think that humans are supposed to act. And maybe by observing all this in nature and also considering the fact that us humans are also nature, we're also animals, that it sort of explains, well, then that's why there's all this diversity even within our own species as well. Something that I do on my queer ecology walks, I start off with is asking folks to share a place that they've connected to nature, right? It is an icebreaker, but it really leads directly into this topic because Western culture views nature as this thing over there, far away, separated, or something, and something that we can dominate. There's a hierarchy to it. We humans are at the top and we can do whatever we want to everything below us. When it comes to attacks on, you know, political kind of attacks on nature or queer people in general, it's all part of that same mindset that within Western culture, it's not just humans are at the top, but it's humans that fit into this right mold, this model of way, the way that you're supposed to be. And you get hints of that when, you know, just with the whole MAGA, Make America Great Again kind of topic of the way that it's supposed to be. And within that mindset, you can subjugate other people in the population that don't fit into your what it's supposed to be, what we're supposed to be like. And you can also subjugate nature to whatever you want as well. You can drill, baby, drill without considering the consequences of destroying a landscape and how that ecosystem will eventually affect us, or the consequences of just continually burning things into the sky without regard for how that will influence or come back to us in the end, or come back to us already right now. The lens of queer ecology kind of lets us expose all of that, really.
Where do you see queerness show up in the plant world?
I kind of started getting into becoming an outdoor educator through my love of plants. So I like to call myself a plant daddy. And so on my queer ecology walks, I start out with plants because they're already showing us a whole array, diversity of ways of existing and reproducing. The biggest example we can start off with is that flowering plants, 95% of plants that have flowers use bisexual reproduction. So they have 90% of flowering plants have everything they do need to reproduce in the same flower. And then another 5% are in two separate flowers on the same plant. They have both quote unquote male and female parts, pollen making, which some in the botanical world would call the male parts, or the pollen receiving, which would be the female parts. You see me saying, quote unquote, I feel it's a little bit odd that we're using an animal, male and female binary structure for a plant that it's doing everything it needs to do to reproduce on its own. It's non-binary. 95% of flowering plants are non-binary. That's also known as a hermaphroditic plant. And those are botanical terms. The non-binary is something that I add, though, because it's like, I think that that reflects on ways that a lot of people are thinking now, like just discussing why are we putting parts of a flower in this binary structure? It's a relic, but it's part of this Western cultural mindset of humans in charge of anything, everything, putting our own expectations onto a plant. Plants are not just choosing one way to reproduce, but also asexual in a lot of cases. And just to get into plants even more, so there's that 5% that would be the heterosexual reproduction. They're making pollen on one plant and receiving pollen on a completely other plant. Except that those plants often will have asexual reproduction too. And except a lot of heterosexual plants have the ability to change their processes. So this has been done and shown in multiple studies where a plant in a community in an area where they're all just making pollen, there's so much we don't understand, but somehow they understand that, hey, we're only making pollen here. We can't reproduce. Someone's got to, okay, fine. I'm gonna change and start receiving the pollen. I'm going to go from a male plant to a female plant. So there's trans in the plant world too. We got bisexual, asexual, heterosexual, and trans, like just in plants right there. So I start off with that to be like, all these plants we see around us, and we don't maybe really think about all the ways in which they've got a whole rainbow of different ways of existing and surviving. And the ones that are here now are the ones that have survived for so many different changes climatically on the planet. These are the ones that have survived, and that's because they embrace diversity, and they're not just choosing one path within a little box of like, well, we can only do this way. Those plants are the ones that didn't survive. The diverse options, these are the strongest plants. That's just how our ecosystem is strong, because of its diversity.
Oh, those fairies at the bottom of our garden. You cannot think how beautiful they are. They all stand up and sing when the fairy queen and king come lightly floating down upon their car. And the queen, now can you guess who that might be? She's a little girl all day, but at night she steals away. Well, it's me! Yes, it's me, darling!
Wow, I mean, that's such a message for the importance and resilience of the LGBT community right there. And I think that's probably something that people want to repress, you know, that information or knowledge. I mean, do you find a lot of resistance from people in your teaching?
In my teaching, in person, never. Because that's also people that come there to learn about this. They're curious about this topic. I don't get any pushback because they're like, tell me more. Instead, where I get pushback would be on social media, you know, because that's where you get, well, it's a much bigger audience.
The trolls.
And you never quite know. Yeah, the trolls. You know, comments like, why are you queering up nature? Why are you like make it like I'm pushing an agenda on nature by simply talking about how plants reproduce or how animals get together in different ways? Well, I would argue that I'm just talking about biology. These are facts. You can look this up in an encyclopedia. I will put it together in a certain way that then reflects back on us people. But really, all the facts are there. They're real. They're indisputable. There is no political agenda on them. And I think what it really exposes is that that's the political agenda, that they're trying to ignore biology and the reality of the natural world out there because of an agenda that they've been convinced they need to follow. And I will continue to talk about these topics because I hope at least some people who maybe had this more rigid idea of things will have their mind open just a little bit, or maybe planting a seed of change to be like, huh, just to pause and think for a minute. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that was happening, you know, and that will that can help to make some change in this world for the better. I work within a space of hope. I have to, especially with what's going on nowadays.
I know that there's been a lot of the government or different administrations locally that are trying to do things to address environmental problems, but sometimes they're making things worse. How do you deal with that? You know, have you found that some of the things that you've addressed are making progress or changing people's minds?
Just about 10 years ago, I quit my previous job where I worked in government affairs and advocacy. So I actually have a master's in public policy, and I focused on environmental policy. But right after grad school, I actually worked for AIDS Project Los Angeles for a while, working on policy issues with primarily the LGBT community, just working on housing issues and food insecurity and funding for HIV/AIDS research and assistance and things like PrEP. And so I in that job, I would go and actually talk to government officials and try and get them to do the right thing. Sometimes that's difficult. My favorite part about that, though, was actually being out in the community with community groups and educating them on how they can advocate for the future that we want to see. I quit my job not because I didn't believe in the cause, but because I wanted to be outside. I felt so stressed in an office and that kind of, that sort of setting, and I was looking for more of, like, you know, a dream job, and I wanted to get back into environmental issues and or maybe figure out how to way to blend that all together, which I feel like queer ecology has really helped me do, because it's environmental, it's part of my queer community and identity as a gay man, and then it also has this advocacy element to it as well. That's, you know, when we change our mindset away from that Western cultural aspect, we start to open up our minds and our doors and our hearts to a diverse array of people and not be scared of something like DEI, right? Or not treat our environment this way, because we're all connected and we're all part of it. People have this mindset when there's after a disaster, and I get that, you know, that's sort of a shock to the system, but it's like, well, you have a choice at that point. How are you going to react? And a lot of times in the past, people have chosen to try and fight nature like it's an enemy. You had the new president coming in here saying, we got to clear it out. We got to clear out the brush around the city. First of all, so many issues with even how that would even be feasible, because in this particular firestorm, wind storm, where embers were burning 3 to 5 miles in distance, according to the firefighters that were there watching the embers fly by and light another house on fire blocks away, that, like, it's impossible to even do anything about that. So what, you cut in 5 miles around a barrier around the city of all that ecosystem, and you have to somehow maintain that? You can't clear that out. That's fighting nature again. There's so many ways that we could work with nature, acknowledge that fire is a real natural element on this planet, and that it's going to be here. So how do we live with it instead of trying to pretend like we can somehow control it? Because we can't. We can't control that sometimes there will be floods. We can't control sometimes that there will be fires. So let's work with nature. Let's partner with nature. And that gets back to queer ecology. It's the same idea, because in that Western cultural hierarchy, we can control and dominate and do whatever we want to nature. But reality shows us time and time again with these disasters that that is not true. We are a part of it, and we need to work together in harmony.
How can people stay in touch with what you're doing, find you?
I'm on social media. My handle is Jason Journeyman. And I'm actually just about to start a little series of just queer-focused history that's being removed from, currently being removed from National Park and National Monument websites by the current administration. Like, example, the Stonewall National Monument, they took out the TQ and now it just says LGB. And I'm like, you can't remove TQ from that story, because that is central to the story. People like Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera.
Thank you so much, Jason Wise. You are indeed. Thanks for joining us on This Way Out Radio today.
Yes, and thanks for having me, Jason Jen.
You can follow and learn more about Jason Wise and his various workshops and seminars online at jasonjourneyman.com and hear the complete half-hour interview with Jason Journeyman on the This Way Out website, where he discusses more about the queer animal world, history of the LA River, and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Jason Jen.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Tanya Kane Perry and Natalie Munoz and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Jason Jen. Bill Withers and Justin Vivian Bond performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Brad Furr of KGAY Palm Springs, California, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, KMUD Arcata, Eureka, Laytonville, Garberville, Shelter Cove, California, WGDR Plainfield, Hardwick, Vermont, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Listen to Armando Puentes every Sunday from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., playing the best in Tejano mixing with some traditional conjunto, as well as mariachi music and public affairs pertaining to the Latino community. That's Armando Puentes.